Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. We're excited to have you with us this evening. I'm Travis.
And I'm Brig.
And got a great show planned for you tonight. If this is your first time joining us on the Row by Row Garden Show, this is our weekly show we do where we talk all things gardening, what's going on currently in the gardens, what we got planned, and we usually pick a kind of a main topic to toss around and discuss in the middle of the show. And then we always answer some viewer questions at the end of the show. And if you have any questions during the show, please put those in the comments and we will get to them on next week's show. And if we answer your question on the show, we always send you a nice little prize. So give us some feedback, give us your questions. We'll always like to hear from our viewers. And we took a little break from eating on the show, but you're back at it, huh?
Well, Thanksgiving was last week, and at this time of year, cold weather, I got y'all juiced up. You want some sweet potatoes, so I've been eating some sweet potatoes a lot. And, you know, we grow that Covington variety this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the boys at Steele told us we had to try Georgia Jets because they was better, but I'm going to tell you, these Covingtons have really performed well, and I want you to look there. Ain't that good? Now, the way I cook mine, as I bake them like you do a regular tater.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put me some like, good Amish butter in there with them. After I peel them when I get through baking, I put them in a bowl. I put some like, good Amish butter, a little cinnamon, and a little honey. I don't put any sugar in mine, but that's the way I like mine. And these Covingtons are absolutely delicious. I've changed my tune a little bit. I think next year I'm going to do me a row of Georgia Jets and a row of Covingtons and do a taste test against them. Because if they're much better than this, I don't know what I'm going
to
do.
You won't be able to stand it.
Well, your wife fixed some sweet potato souffle out of them last week. It was the best I have ever had.
Yeah?
So, I'm a big fan of them until something changes my mind.
Huh. So, I'm not a huge fan of sweet potatoes that are sweetened like that. I like mine more salty. So, the way we cook them is we cut them up in little kind of French fry pieces and put them in the oven, put salt on them and olive oil and bake them.
I like sweet potatoes as a dessert. I don't care for it. Sweet potato fries do not fit my fancy.
Really?
I don't
see, that's the only way I really like them. I don't know. Not really a fan of them with sugar, but each to their own. Well, we had a little cold spell come through here. I didn't notice any frost damage this morning. The top of my broccoli leaves had a little kiss of frost on, but I didn't notice anything that got burnt.
No, I hadn't either. Of course, grass and all that kind of stuff. Some of you, my fig trees, you know, it put them in the dormant stage. The leaves got burnt on them. But nothing in the garden looks like it got damaged. So we're looking pretty good. Looks like we're going to have a cold winter.
Yeah, it does. It does. And, well, the one thing a few weeks ago, I'd say a week or so ago, that last cold spell we had wound up the okra. And I was pulling up my okra, which is a lot easier to pull up if the ground's a little wet and it's kind of frostbit. And I was just going to show everybody. When I pull up my okra, I always like to look for them root knot nematodes. And as opposed to those one, we did a 2-minute tip. The ones I pulled up earlier in the year, kind of my mid-season okra, I had a bunch of them nodules on the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I planted my cover crop of mustard. Kind of try to help get rid of them nematodes. Mm-hmm. Now these here look pretty good. I don't see any root nodules on them. A good little root structure there. So I don't think I'm going to follow these with any mustard cover crop. I think I'm going to go ahead and put some beets or some stuff there. Because I think I'm pretty fairly root knot nematode safe. What do you think?
I think so too. But you always got to be aware of the potential of that. That's the reason. Cover crops and rotation, especially on things like okra, is very important. We have people all the time talk about, my garden's not as productive as it used to be, and my granddaddy's farmed here, gardened here forever. Hey, move it to another spot. The Amish believe in a 3 to 7 year rotation on kind of that deal, and I'm beginning to become a big believer in that. Rotate that garden around to a different area and use those cover crops, and don't continue to do the same thing over and over in the same spot, or you're going to have problems.
That's right. That's right. And that's why we like to break our gardens up in little pieces. It's easier to do that. And that's some trunks right there.
It is. And that's a good root system.
Good root system for that okra. we got transplants. I got transplants still going in the ground. I put some of this Paris Island romaine in the ground a week or so ago. That's pretty right there.
Yeah, I got wild olive grow romaine. I mean, I grow some of the other. I got some of the other plants that I can have, but that romaine's one of the easiest for me to grow.
It does well in the seed trays and it transplants out.
And it stands up and it doesn't get as dirty when you harvest it. So it's cleaner too.
It's compact. Yeah. And you can plant this stuff pretty tight and pretty close together along the row. We've got some, I've got some more Brussels sprouts that need to go down. Those right there are ready to go. And the Brussels sprouts, I'm loving that cold weather.
Yep.
And then we've got nice little beet transplant there. Yep.
And beets can one of the more challenging plants to grow as a plant, but it can be done.
Right, right. Yeah, they're a little trickier, but these things are going to do a lot better when you transplant them in the ground than direct seeding them. Keep your weed pressure down, and your thinning's already done for you when you put them in the ground. Let's get to our tool of the week, and this is kind of appropriate with what you were talking about with your fig trees. I started kind of pruning mine a little bit last week, and I ain't far from pruning my muscadine vines once all the leaves fall off of it. So what do you got there?
Well, this is a pruner that sourced a few years ago, and these are made in Italy. They tell me that all your good pruners are made in the same town in Italy. So these are made over there, and these are carbon steel, which I really like because they're easy to sharpen. Now this particular one has a bolt through there, so you can take these apart and sharpen them. That's an issue with some of them. If you use them a lot, they get dull and you can't sharpen them. But you can take these apart, sharpen them just like you would a pair of scissors or a knife. They got a nice little leather thing over there that holds them together there. They are high carbon steel, so the kickback there is it's not stainless, they will rust. So always keep your tools coated with some type of oil. Take care of them, put them inside. This is a high quality tool that I would not leave out. And I would take care of them and last you a long time. These actually have a lifetime warranty.
Right.
There've been a couple we've had to replace that's come back that was broke. I don't know how they got broke. I didn't ask any questions. We just sent them a new one. So they got a lifetime warranty. And it's a great little tool to have. Last you forever. And we sell lots and lots of them.
Yeah, these ain't like your frilly pruners with your pink purple handles on them. If you want something to look cute in the garden, this ain't the way to go. But if you want a pair of pruners that's going to last you a long, long time, and like he said, you could take that bolt off there, sharpen them puppies up because they're pretty sharp. And just no nonsense. No bells and whistles here. Just straight working tool there. So check those pruners out. These make a great gift for anybody, whether you're a vegetable gardener or got some plants around the house or whatever. Check those out. And then today's main segment, or tonight's main segment, what we're going to be talking about is garlic.
We got to talk about garlic.
Garlic. So we got our onions are supposed to be here tomorrow.
Yep.
On Friday.
Yep.
And putting those in, and I got to get my elephant garlic in, and just got us to thinking, we haven't really done a show on talking about garlic. So we're going to talk about soft-neck garlic, hard-neck garlic, and then elephant garlic, and kind of share our successes and failures along the way. So, first of all, let's talk about non-elephant garlic, your standard garlic. You've got kind of two different types. You've got soft-neck and hard-neck garlic, and there's a lot of varieties there within each of those categories.
Yeah, I got exposed to the garlic thing a few years ago in Pennsylvania at Mother Earth News Fair. There was a couple of garlic farmers there, and they had several different varieties out there, and I went over and talked to them, and they actually sold out in a couple of days there. I didn't, up to that point, realize the garlic industry like it is, the different types of garlic, because here in the South, we're just not used to that. But there is some very unique garlics that can be grown up north that have very good, taste and flavor distinctions that we're not used to. And I was very intrigued by all the different types of garlics, different type of flavors, and what all you could do with them. I wish we could grow them better down here, but it is what it is.
So let's talk about the differences between the soft neck and the hard neck. So the soft neck is going to do better in areas with the mild winters.
Yeah.
Okay. So not as cold. They say they have better flavor. They're going to store better. Now, they don't make those really pretty scapes that a lot of the market farmers like to cut and sell. But they do make enough stem where you can braid them to get, a lot of people will braid them together for storage. I've seen people do that with onions too. Then you got your hardneck garlic, which is, I think, what most people are buying at stores and stuff.
Actually, most of your generic garlic that you see in the store is a softneck garlic called silver skin.
So the hardneck is grown in areas with real cold winters, way up north. It has a milder flavor. It doesn't store as well, and but it produces those long, pretty scapes that you can harvest and add those as a garnish in dishes or cook those as well. We tried garlic a few years ago, softneck garlic, right?
Yeah, I did some research on garlic for a long time, talked to a lot of people, and I tried several different varieties in the garden out there, and I had a colossal failure. Yeah, got several different varieties that were supposed to grow good in our area here, and it just didn't work out. So I've kind of X'd that off. The problem with it in our climate is we don't never know what kind of winter we're going to have. If we have a hard winter, I think you could be successful growing some of these varieties. But if you have a mild winter like what we had, you know, a year or two ago, it's just not going to do well. And it's just hard to put that much work effort into it and have something beyond your control ruin that crop out there. And that's kind of where I fell off with me. I mean, I put a lot of effort in it, spent a little bit of money trialing these varieties. And, I mean, I babied them and it just didn't turn out. We had one of those warm winters. Garlic needs cold weather.
Right. And so garlic requires this process called vernalization. And that basically means it, you're subjecting it to cold temperatures to get it to flower or bulb to produce offspring for the plant. And if it doesn't ever get real cold, that's not ever going to happen. Now, there's some people out there online that claim if you live in a southern climate like this, you can put it in the refrigerator before you plant it. You can put some shade over the plants and do some
mulch them. You can mulch them, keep the soil temperature lower. All those are good things to do, but in the end of the day, it matters what kind of winter you're going to have.
Right. So that vernalization, two big words of the day here. Vernalization and stratification.
Stratification, I'm familiar with.
Okay, so vernalization is the subjection to the cold temperatures, and that creates the stratification in the bulb, which gives you all the different clothes.
Okay.
So if you don't have vernalization,
you don't get stratification.
You're not going to get stratification, and you're going to end up with nothing down there when you pull up them garlic plants or whatever. I think your plants made it. There just wasn't nothing on
them. Yeah, they just wasn't. I didn't have no. My plants grew. I just didn't have any bulbs.
Yeah. As far as harvesting garlic, they say you want to, once it flowers, you want to cut it off. And that's going to put more energy into that bulb there. And then once those leaves turn brown, you can pick it. But like you said, we haven't had much luck with the soft neck garlic. Definitely would never try the hard neck because it doesn't get cold enough.
But, you know, I have heard there is some Cajun varieties that you can grow in these areas here. And somebody's had success with that growing in Zone 8. I'd definitely like to hear about it. I might give it a shot later on, but I'm going to have to see more success than what I've seen in the past. Now let's get to what does work for us.
So what we have had good success with, and what I would recommend if you live in a warmer climate, instead of trying and failing maybe with the soft net, is elephant garlic, which is not a true garlic. It is actually closer related to the leeks.
If they're all in the onion family.
Yeah, they're all alliums in the onion family. It looks like garlic. In my opinion, it tastes like garlic.
It's a little milder than some of your garlics out there, but it's something we've had good success with.
Right. You can buy the cloves online. Typically, for some reason, garlic seed costs more than garlic does a lot of times. But we've been saving our elephant garlic seed over and over.
Well, seed our bulb, our seed our stock. Bulk, seed
right.
stock.
You've already planted yours.
I do. So what I do is I harvest it. I treat my elephant garlic just like I do my onions.
Right.
And I grow them just like that and have success with it. But this time of year, when it's time for me to plant my elephant garlic that I planted about a week ago, I go through there and I pick out my biggest cloves. And I set them aside for my seed stock, and the smaller ones we eat. And I take these bigger cloves and I bust them apart and I plant them out there exactly like I do onions. I may plant them a little bit further apart because I don't pull the spring onions. I pull spring onions, plant my onions a little bit, but I plant them about that far apart. Mm-hmm. And then do them just like I do onions. Now, in our climate, our coastal plain soils right here, we have to add just a little bit of sulfur periodically to these type crops. But you, first thing you want to do is you want to adjust, make sure your pH is adjusted between 6 and 6.5. And then you want to, your fertilizer requirements on this type of stuff is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 units of NKP, and that's equal of the NKP, which is nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, because these root crops take a lot of phosphorus and potassium.
To get started.
So you're looking at basically 150 units per acre, and I'm going to break that down in per 1,000 square feet because that's what most of us are doing here. So... Oh, and these things stay in the ground a long time, so you don't want to put that fertilizer out there one time. You want to bust this up probably about 3 to 5 applications. That way you can keep some air through the growing period. But you're looking on a 50-pound bag of 10-10-10. You're looking at about, that's enough fertilizer to grow 1,500 square feet of onions or garlic or elephant garlic. That's going to be your fertilizer requirements. Bust that up, 3 to 5 different applications. Put a little bit out there every now and then. And there you go. 150-pound bag of 10-10-10 on 1,500 square feet. Now, you can play with math if you got a different formulation than that or you got a smaller garden than that. That just gives you a rule of thumb of how much fertilizer you want over that growing season.
That's a decent amount of fertilizer.
That's a decent amount of fertilizer. Yeah. They're heavy feeders.
They are heavy feeders. As far as planting them, if when you bust apart a clove like that, you'll notice it has a little crescent shape to it. And you want to plant it so that that blunt end is down and pointy ends are facing up.
Yep.
That's going to help your plant get up out of the ground.
Yeah, I plant mine about yay deep. What I do is take my wheel hoe, bust it out with a plow, mm-hmm. like I plant my potatoes. I put them in the, actually, I used a dibble wheel. I bust it out with a plow, and I run my dibble wheel through there, and that gave me my space, and I put them in there. Then I took the plow on the wheel hoe, and I covered them back up.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, all garlic or whatever, elephant garlic includes, is going to be overwintered. So mm-hmm. we plant it this time of year, we harvest it in spring, just like yeah. we do our onions. Yeah. Although we've never grown leeks before, when we get these leeks in from Dixondale, I expect they would be grown the exact same
yeah.
way.
So
trial and error. One thing I didn't do last year that I might do this year is, they say when you harvest them, if you cut that stalk, they dry out better. I've always kind of left the stalk attached for a little bit.
I have two, they're easier to handle, but I may do that also. Now, I do cut my blooms off on that elephant garlic when it starts blooming, and that puts more energy and makes those bigger bulbs. So make sure, and it makes a big flower. It's easy to see. It's pretty good size. So just when these things start what we call bolting or flowering, cut them off, and that'll leave them in there a little bit longer, and that bulb get bigger, and before long, it's ready to harvest.
That's right. So when you're planting your onions, get you some elephant garlic, throw in there, and a nice little addition to your onion crop. You're going to have the same kind of growing habits, same kind of nutritional needs.
Stores better than onions.
Way better.
Yeah, way better than onions. Now, if you're in some of the northern climates and you can grow some of these good garlics, then I would definitely do it. We're a little bit envious of that. Now, the new thing now is the black garlics.
Black garlics.
Yeah, I've seen some of those online. That's the new things with the big chefs out there is these black garlics. Hadn't tried any, but it's kind of unique.
What's the rave about them? Just the appearance?
Yeah, they got a little different flavor to them, and just, I guess so. They look kind of neat.
Yeah, so give garlic a try. Let us know if you've had good success with garlic. We'd love to hear all of y'all's stories or any tips you might have.
Yep.
We're not garlic experts.
And if you got good garlic you're growing in the South, that it's a variety, or you got some tips and tricks, be sure to let us know. We're interested in that.
That's right. All right. Well, let's get to our Q&A segment this week. And our first question is from Andrew Michaud. And he wants to know, any thoughts on the soil block method versus the seed trays? He likes the look of our seed trays. But he's torn between getting a 5-pack of trays and one of these rascals right here.
Can I take this one?
Yeah, go ahead.
If you ain't got nothing to do, and you like to really just kind of waste a bunch of your time and some of your money, then you need to get you one of these soul walkers, because that's what you're fixing to do. I don't know why in the world somebody would want to go through this. And then there's a lot of YouTube things out there showing how all this done. I've seen it demonstrated. I got a good friend, Lisa Ziegler, that just, she raves and raves about it. It is a huge waste of time to me. That's like, I just don't understand why you want to walk when you got a car you can ride in. It just don't make any sense to me.
It's like getting a spoon when you need a shovel.
Yeah, it just don't make any sense. You can go out there with some good pot mix, like what we sell, this Pro Mix with these seed trays. And looking at all the arguments that they make on this soil blocking versus the seed trays, didn't hold water.
Mm-mm.
These seed trays are...
Well, a lot of the arguments they're making are versus the cheap seed trays, not versus the seed trays that last a lifetime.
Yeah, these seed trays we got, if you take care of them, they're going to last you forever. You go out there, put your pot and soil in them, plant them, be done before you even get your stuff mixed up for this right here. And plus, you can grow some great quality plants with these seed trays. The key to the seed trays, folks, is using good pot and soil.
Good pot and soil, and putting some fertilizer to them. Our seed trays are 162 cells. I can seed one of those in about 5 minutes. This, to do 162 plants, it's going to take you an afternoon. And then when you go to water them, they fall apart. There's no easy way to transport them to the field. I can grab that seed tray with one hand, throw it in the back of the truck, ready to go. So just depends on how you like spending your day.
Yep. If you want to get something done, get your seed trays with good pot and soil. If you just want to stare and play in the dirt, get your soil block mix in. That's the way to go. If you like playing in the dirt, not getting anything done. All right, I'm gonna read the second one and let you take it, because you got a little bit more experience with this one than I do.
All right,
so the old Thomas Gary says, it's my first year growing Brussels down here in Cajun country.
Okay.
They are coming along great, but I hear I need to stress them by topping or removing the leaves to get them to pump energy into those auxiliary buds. Any tips on when and how to stress those Brussels sprouts?
Yeah, so, I'm on my second, kind of third year growing Brussels sprouts now, and I've experimented with this, and it does work. He's right. So what happens is those plants are just going to make a bunch of leaves to start with. It's kind of this center stalk with a ton of foliage on it. And then you'll start to see those little axillary buds form there along that stalk, and that's where your Brussels sprouts are going to be. If you don't go in there and cut it or anything, you're going to have a lot more of that plant's energy to making leaves and top as opposed to making Brussels sprouts. The other thing you'll notice too, if you don't top them, is that your Brussels sprouts will be unevenly sized along the stalk there. So I take a pair of pruners, because that top of that stalk can be a little
tough.
So I take my pruners and I go in there and I'll just cut off the top of that stalk. And that's going to kind of eliminate that apical meristem there and start putting some
more... Whose stem?
The top meristem, where all the growth is focused. And put more energy into those buds or those Brussels sprouts. Now, some people will say, go ahead and pluck off all the side leaves, too. My experience is they'll kind of die off over time. So you can pull those off if you like. I don't know if that's completely necessary. But definitely, once you start seeing those little buds... go ahead and top those off, and you'll get a lot more even production out of that stalk. Now, I can't, and it might be a variety thing, but I've seen some farmers up north can get these 2 foot tall stalks of Brussels sprouts. Mine only get about a foot, maybe 14, 15 inches tall, but it's probably a factor of the cold weather. We don't have as much cold weather, a long enough cold season, but. Do that with your Brussels sprouts, and you'll be good to go. And you gonna finish up your bowl of sweet potatoes?
Yeah, if we can wrap this thing up, yeah.
All right. Well, we better get out of here so he can finish eating the sweet potatoes. We hope you enjoyed the show tonight. We will see you guys next week.